Hey, if you love the great shows on NPR and Car Talk, too, please make a donation to the NPR network. Your support not only funds a complete waste of time like our show, but also supports independent news and information and coffee for all those poor newscasters who get up at 0:30. Poor jamokes. Please take a minute and make your donation now by going to donate.npr.org/cartalk. Thanks. Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack the Tappet Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Anticipation Center here at Car Talk Plaza.
Oh, that explains all those empty boxes of high-fiber cereal I
saw. No. We're anticipating the announcement next week of the winner of the Dewey Cheatham & Howe Company Picnic Contest.
Yo-ho-ho.
Now, for those of you that haven't been here before, the winner will get an almost all-expense-paid trip for four to our fair city to attend the picnic.
Yeah.
And on our next program, we'll throw all of the contest entries into the trunk of Tommy's 63 Dart.
Yes.
Well, that's going to be...
We did this before.
Then, if we can trick him into it like we've done in the past, we'll throw our producer, Doug Lavoisier Berman, into the trunk, slam the lid, and
then take off for 3 weeks vacation. Is that it?
No. Dougie will emerge with the winning postcard between his teeth.
It's the same place where he's usually got a piece of spinach between his teeth?
Exactly. I don't know, but make sure you're with us next week. I'm sure it's going to be very, very exciting.
Do you happen to know that this month has been a big month for transportation-oriented related things?
No kidding.
For example, in 1927... Lindbergh flew across the Atlantic. In 1932, our pal Amelia Earhart
disappeared in the Pacific.
Flew across the Atlantic.
Right.
First woman to ever fly across the Atlantic. In 1506, Christopher Columbus died.
Oh, I thought it's when he made his first nonstop flight across the Atlantic. No?
You know, Christopher Columbus died in poverty.
Is it,
you know what that is?
I thought
he died in Spain. And last but not least, in 1939... Pan Am. Remember Pan Am?
Yes.
Started regular transatlantic air service.
To the Far East.
Flying across, also the Atlantic.
Oh, really?
The big month for the Atlantic.
It was indeed.
And so since this show is now going to be called Transportation, what did we call it? Transportation?
Transportation Chat. Wouldn't that be a nice sedate title?
Wouldn't that?
Subdue.
Oh, yeah. And NPR would like it.
Yeah. We probably wouldn't. Anyway, if you want to talk to us, the number is 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Cynthia Conley, and I'm calling from Arlington, Virginia.
Yeah.
And I have a 63 Falcon with a 144 engine and a two-speed automatic.
You and my brother must be soulmates of some kind.
What color is it?
Oh, those! I'll tell you what color it is.
My car
green,
defies definition.
Green color, that off-white.
Well, her Falcon,
off
you mean?
Off-white.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah, with a blue top.
Oh, the blue top. Oh, you got the deluxe version.
A sedan.
You have a heater?
Yeah, heater. No air conditioning, of course. But that's not the problem. Actually, the problem that I have is late last summer, I got my car tuned by this guy. Did a really good job. And it drove really well. And then one day while I was driving, I sort of felt there wasn't a noise, but it had that feeling of a pop sort of. Something happened. It was raining out. And something happened in the pickup. Since it's a two-speed, it shifts only two times. And in the first gear, it sort of sounds like it's sort of...
struggling?
It's sort of struggling, right. And then all of a sudden, it just kicks in and acts normal. And the guy thought it was the vacuum control unit, and he doesn't think it is that, and we don't know what it is, and we're all sort of scratching our heads. I don't know if he knows what he's talking about now.
Well, this is the guy that just a minute ago did a great job tuning it up, and now he's a blithering idiot?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
you're likening him to my brother already?
But let me get this straight. I'm not sure I understand. I don't have a feeling for the problem yet.
Okay.
Does the car idle smoothly?
Yes, it does.
Is it an automatic transmission?
Yes.
Yeah.
So when it's in drive and you're stopped, it idles perfectly smoothly?
Yes.
What do you mean, yes?
Well, as smooth as a...
It does idle smoothly. The only thing it does, I think it's something in the carburetor needs to be adjusted anyway.
Uh-huh.
It sort of feels like it's about to stall at some point. But it idles...
So it doesn't idle smoothly. It shakes a little bit. It shakes a little bit.
It runs as smoothly as it's ever run, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Okay. Right. So now you step on the gas, and it starts to go. Does it have a lot of pickup?
No.
When I step on the gas, it feels like it's choking. Like, I thought it was the carburetor. I thought there was the improper, like, air-gas mix or whatever that is.
Yeah.
No, there
right.
isn't.
So, I mean, it feels like, you know, like the carburetor is sticking or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It doesn't go.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, it just, like, miraculously just starts going. So, like, if I want to get onto a highway, I can't. I have to wait till there's virtually no cars for miles. Like, step on it, and it's just sort of going, and then all of a sudden, it'll just go.
It'll go. And when it goes, I mean, does it go like a rocket? No.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I would guess the centrifugal advance in the distributor isn't working. It sounds like a classic case of timing that isn't advancing enough. And he probably doesn't even have a timing like this guy. Did he set the points
with
a piece of wood?
Well, you know, he tuned it and it worked fine.
Well, it may have worked fine until something broke.
Yeah, and you said it happened all of a sudden.
Right. The weird thing is this happens. That's why it happens when it's raining, it's worse. When it's more humid or it's raining a lot.
Yeah, well, that would stand to reason because for one reason or another, either the spark is too weak, which could be caused by points that are set incorrectly or a bad condenser or a bad ground or a bad connection or bad timing. So he needs to go and rethink the tune-up.
Okay.
I'm sure he's done that. I mean,
he hasn't.
He probably, when you brought it back, he probably checked all the things that he had done to make sure he didn't screw up.
Well, he actually just sort of looked at it. It was actually raining out, so he sort of looked at it and said, "Well, it's not the vacuum."
He didn't check anything.
Gone back to him because it's just sort of
no. See, the first thing
it might be as simple as the points closed up.
The first thing that we check when a customer comes back
is everything you did
with a problem. No, it's to see if they have any additional money to spend.
Right.
Because if you don't have any more money to spend, then there's no advantage to finding out what the other problems
might
be.
Well, I have no more money to spend.
Well, that's why he said it's fine. Just drive it. Yeah, you can never divulge that. Don't ever divulge that you're broke.
The fact that it happened all of a sudden and the fact that you say you heard a little noise when it happened,
yeah.
I would have to go along with my brother. I like the centrifugal advance theory.
Okay.
This thing is inside the distributor.
Okay. Yeah.
Actually, I'm leaning more toward the points having closed
you
up.
You like that, huh?
Because he didn't put cam lube on. Because is this guy young?
No, he's not. I think he would have done something like
How
that.
How old is he?
He's about 40, 43.
Well, his mind's turned to mush. He probably forgot.
Too old.
He's too old, right.
Yeah. Except that doesn't explain the noise. But the noise may not have really occurred. The noise may be a red herring. Tell him to check the points, and while he's got the distributor cap off, he will also look to see if he can see whether the centrifugal advance looks like it's broken.
Okay.
That's my guess. Good
Sounds
luck.
Simple, Cynthia. Well,
thank you very much.
See ya.
Bye.
1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Mike from Royal Oak, and I'm wondering, do you guys know anything about Toyota Corollas?
No.
No.
Hang up. Royal Oak?
Royal Oak where?
Royal Oak, Michigan.
Oh, Michigan.
Well, okay.
Toyota Corollas. We know everything that needs to be known about Corollas.
All right.
How do you spell Corolla? Is that with a K or a C?
Yeah. What year is it?
It's an 84.
Oh, yeah.
84, yeah.
That's the first year they went to front-wheel drive.
Uh-huh.
So we even know our Corolla history.
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing.
It is amazing.
And we have carburation here.
Yeah. So, shoot.
It's making this noise. When I come up to stop signs or stop lights, it's this high-pitched, I'm a singer, so I should do this real well.
Yeah, go.
And it just gets louder and louder.
Oh, as you're applying the brake and coming to a stop, that's when you hear the noise.
Yeah.
That sounded like an A two octaves above middle C. Was I right?
It could be. I think it was an A-flat, actually.
A-flat, okay.
But, see, the deal is that when I put it in park or neutral, the noise stops even if my foot's on the brake.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wait, whoa. What do you mean? You can't put it in park if you're moving.
Well, no.
Well, you can, but in other words, as you're going along, you're slowing down, you step on the pedal, the brake pedal that is, you hear the noise.
Right.
While the noise is being made, you shift it into neutral and the noise immediately goes away.
Correct.
And if you shift it back into drive, the noise immediately returns?
Yes.
I have no idea.
Excellent, Mike. This is...
It sounded great, though.
This is excellent.
Well, give us a little help here. I mean, we need help. It's obvious.
Okay.
Who's looked at it? What have they done? How many brake jobs have they sold you?
Somebody about 15,000 miles ago in Bellingham, Washington, said, it's your transmission. And he said, if you don't replace it right away, it's going to go. And I said, will anything go but the transmission if I just ride it like this? And he said, no. So 15,000 miles later, that hasn't been a problem. But
I don't think it's the transmission.
Well, I must say that I'm leaning toward the transmission. In fact, I'm leaning right on it right now. I'm leaning toward the transmission, and I was going to ask you some very important leading questions if the prosecution will allow it.
Beige.
will the noise occur if you slow down without stepping on the brake pedal, i.e., if you just take your foot off the gas? So the brake pedal is a red herring here.
Right.
Oh.
And I think it has to do with being within 0 to 10 miles per hour.
Yes, because you're in, you've downshifted. It's downshifted into first gear.
Right.
And that's where the noise is coming
from.
I'm
leaning with my brother then if that's the case.
Right.
Yeah. No, I think it probably is the transmission. I hope that you have done the standard things like the incantation and changing the transmission fluid in the filter.
Right, I did that.
How many miles are on this beast, this Corolla?
Please, about 90,000.
90,000. Well, there's no advantage to preempting the repair.
Certainly not.
Right.
I mean, I would drive it until it gives you some strong evidence that it's about to fall out.
If you're real lucky, the engine will blow up first.
Right.
And then you won't have to fix the transmission.
You drive it till it breaks,
mm-hmm.
and when it does break, you try to find yourself a secondhand transmission for $300 or $400.
Right.
That's what I would do. In fact, you may want to buy the transmission now and just kind of haul it around for a while. Get it, you know, so it'll gain familiarization with the car. I think that's important.
So that you won't have rejection.
Yeah, because
when
there
you transplant these things, you know, sometimes it doesn't take.
No, you might have to start pumping it with antibiotics before you put it in.
Well, they do that. They mix it right in with the transmission
fluid. I would try that first. But don't worry about a thing. Life's too short.
Just keep driving it, Mike. It isn't even worth thinking about.
Gotcha.
Good luck. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back with the answer to the puzzler after these messages.
Well, as you may know, we're having a big listener party here in our fair city on June 26th.
That's a Saturday, you know.
That is, yes. The Dewey Cheatham and Howe Company Picnic. And we asked you guys to tell us, you guys being our listeners, in 25 words or fewer, why you want to come. And next week, we're going to pick a postcard at random. And that person whose postcard we pick at random will be flown to Boston with three friends or family members or whomever and be our guests at the picnic.
Wow.
Now, just to get you in the mood for the big announcement next week, here are some of the great postcards. Well, here are some of the I'll delete the great part. Here are some of the postcards that we've received. Now, needless to say, these have been taken from the mail bin and, of course, will be restored to that, so they'll have their chance.
Of course, they will have just as much of a chance as you don't have to write anything clever. It says here, this one's from Shirley Albert in Baltimore. She says, besides the free trip, I want to test the adage that you have to be ugly to be funny. You guys must be real bow-wows. Okay, Shirley, you're going to get yours.
Right, let me put that in the special container, so that's no problem.
Here's a good one from Durand Dudley of Findlay, Ohio. There is a mean Doberman in my neighborhood whose name is Nugan. If I could attend the picnic, then I could be far from Nugan. Look at that. Bad.
Oh, that is very bad. Okay, do one more. That's about all we can take.
Well, I'll read a little poem, and then I'll read you the one I like the best. Here's the little poem.
Did you write this?
From Jeff Belch from Chicago. I've owned Chevy, Toyota, and Datsy, and I wish to communicate grazie. They kept the cars running with jalopular cunning, Tommy and Remy Magliazzi. And this one is especially
Robert Frost, eat your heart out.
This is from Suzanne Corey from where? San Antonio. I want to attend the DCH picnic because I have lost enthusiasm for San Antonio since they moved the Alamo.
Right on. We'll read a few more later on. And by the way, if you're wondering where the puzzler is,
it'll be
back next week, at least until July, when it goes on summer vacation.
Oh, well deserved.
Schedule just
add.
Like yours.
Yeah. Well, it's important.
It is. 1-800-332-9287.
I understand some people work like 11 and a half months of the year.
Yeah.
It's unconscionable.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Undesirable, too.
Undesirable.
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Peter. I'm calling from Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah, how are you, Peter?
I'm doing great, or the People's Republic of Boulder, as we call it.
Yes.
I've got a 1969 Jeep Commando.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of taking it to an automotive psychologist, but I thought I would try you guys first, because it has this interesting problem. It can sense fear.
Just like a dog.
It's like a Doberman Pinscher.
Exactly.
And they
smell it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And typically it runs just great.
As soon as you try to get it out in the highway, is that when it...
No, it's whenever I'm in a hurry to get somewhere, it'll refuse to start.
Ah,
and so
sure.
It can sense when I'm in a hurry, or I don't use it for play when I have to be somewhere on time very often, but when I use it when I have to be somewhere on time...
Right. You get in the car and you say, I hope this piece of junk starts,
exactly.
Even if you say it to yourself. You turn the key and nothing happens.
And, you know, if I've got to get to a meeting or I'm trying to get home at a certain time, I'll jump in the Jeep and turn it over and it won't do anything. It'll just sit there.
No sound whatsoever.
No sound whatsoever.
Oh, that's good.
And whenever you, in order to get it to start, you have to go through a ritual. The ritual.
Go ahead. We're ready. We love it.
Okay.
Your face toward the east, right? You take off your shirt.
Does it involve, like, wearing pantyhose or anything? I just want to make sure. This is a family show, you know.
Are there any farm animals involved?
It's a lot like that.
Okay.
This is a ritual I've been doing for 5 years, despite several mechanics looking at it.
Yeah, what do you do?
Well, you start by wiggling all the wires under the dashboard.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's just kind of that doesn't really do anything.
That's just kind of a warm-up.
No, I like that because that goes along with my theory, but go ahead. Yeah.
And that doesn't do anything. It won't, it'll still, you know, the amp light will come on, but it won't do anything.
Oh, prior to which the amp light didn't come on?
No, the amp light always comes on.
Oh,
is this
okay.
An automatic?
It dims, so it kind of shows that you've, draining current.
Oh, this is not an automatic.
No.
Okay, good.
And then you have to get out of the vehicle, open the hood, wiggle a specific set of wires kind of near the firewall.
Yeah.
And then slam the hood down and get back into the Jeep, and it'll start right up.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Have you ever tried isolating the particular piece of the ritual which does it?
Yeah.
For example, did you ever just try shaking the wires underneath? You said that doesn't do it, so we know it's not that.
Do it, but I think that that if you don't go through the whole ritual, it upsets it. And then
you have to do all the steps.
Yeah.
That's right.
I suspect that if you skip the first two steps and just slam the hood, that would do it.
That's what I thought for a long time, that the whole thing was just slamming the hood.
Yeah. Did you ever test that theory?
Yeah, and it's still just opening the hood and slam it didn't seem to appease this particular Jeep.
Ah.
Gee, it sounds to me, as a layman... that you have a bad connection at the solenoid.
The solenoid?
Doesn't this thing have, I believe this vehicle uses a Ford starter, and one of the things that you're jiggling wires on looks like a little cylinder, maybe about 2 inches high by an inch or so in diameter, with a bunch of wires connected to it, like four? No, say yes. The flow of the show will be much better if you say yes.
No. Tell the truth, Peter. Don't lie just for the sake of the flow.
All right, tell the truth.
Now these wires are on the firewall and not on the fender.
They're on the fender.
He said the firewall. The firewall. There goes the solenoid.
Right behind the air filter near what I think is the ballast resistor or some strange thing.
Yeah.
That ain't it either.
The solenoid's on the fender, so it's not the solenoid.
Okay.
That takes care of that theory.
I've replaced the ignition switch, and recently the engine's been replaced.
Hmm.
And the starter solenoid itself has been replaced during this 5 years of this ritual. And it doesn't. None of that seems to affect the ritual.
What size motor is this?
It's a V6.
V? They didn't do no stinking Vs in 69. They were still working on
burning
coal.
It's a straight six.
It's a six.
Yeah.
It's a six.
Yeah. All right. Now let's go back. I think I'm going to have to revise my opinion here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm convinced now that the slamming of the hood is what fixes it. Because I think somewhere you have a bad ground.
Okay.
And maybe that bad ground is getting just momentarily fixed when you slam the hood. And once you start it, you don't need that ground anymore, because that ground is the ground that runs from the block back to the battery. So that's the wire that I would focus on.
Okay.
Because I think that's where your bad connection is. You're sending electricity from the battery to the starter, but it has to make the complete loop and come back to the battery, and it can't do it because you have a bad ground. And when you slam the hood or jiggle the wires or spin around anti-clockwise three times or do whatever you do.
Widdershins, I believe we call it, yeah.
Yes, what's the other way?
I don't know.
So would the best recommendation just be to, like, jump up and down to the hood whenever I need to start?
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
You know, kick the bumper.
I mean, none of this explains how it knows that you're in a hurry, of course.
Right.
But you must have some subconscious reflexive reaction.
Something in your body language. It's the way you get into the seat.
Right.
It's the way, like, I jump in it when I'm in a hurry.
Right.
Or something.
You jump in, and whatever that jumping does, that's what makes that connection. Yeah.
I think that must be it, because, you know, whenever I take it to mechanics, it starts fine, because mechanics are never in a hurry.
That's right.
Exactly.
Especially when they're on the clock. But I would have your mechanic look at the ground connections. That's where the problem is.
Okay.
Good luck, Peter.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, the Puzzler Answer and more calls are coming up right after this.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to try to answer your questions about cars and car repair and fame and fortune, two areas that we're not very familiar with.
No, we aren't, but we're going to be soon.
Really?
If we pay attention to Jeff Williams from Berkeley.
I'm ready.
Dear Tom and Ray, isn't it about time for your big break?
Indeed.
You guys have slaved away at this show for years now. Developing name recognition as knowledgeable, trustworthy, considerate automobile repair personalities, and it seems only appropriate that you parlay this recognition into a series of shallow, mindless, poorly written TV shows and movies, and worthless retail merchandise that will make you tons of money.
What a genius!
Oh my God, this is it.
And who would play us in the movie?
Well, Robert Redford would do me. I don't know about you. Is Bela Lugosi still alive?
If you'd like to call us, the number is 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Yes, hello. This is the Queen of England. I wanted to talk to you about the movie I'm going to be appearing in.
How fortunate. Are you really English?
Actually, I'm Sarah Rome from Albany, Oregon.
Sarah Rome from Albany? What a strange combination of things here. First you tell us you're the queen, then you say your name is Rome, and you're from Albany, but not the Albany everybody knows, Albany, New York, Albany, Oregon. You are a strange person, Sarah.
An enigma.
I didn't even know there was an Albany. Do you know there's an Albany in every state in the United States?
No. Sarah, what's on your mind?
A blue Mazda 1990-323. And it's a wonderful car. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. I get thousands of miles to the gallon.
Good.
And I could probably drive to Boston and back
on a tank
of petrol.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But my question is more of a generic driving question, and I hope you experts can shed some light.
We love generic questions.
Well,
go ahead.
Years and years ago, I was in Her Majesty's Police Force, and I was required to do a police driving course. And the gentleman who was in charge was Inspector George Lavender, not to be messed with.
No kidding.
And I distinctly remember him telling us that every time we effected a complete stop, we always had to engage the handbrake. When I moved to the United States, also a long time ago, I endorsed his method of driving. And every time I come to a stop, I engage my handbrake because my car is manual.
Yeah.
And at least 200 people that I know tell me that's not the correct way to do things. And I've argued the point, well, I think it's safer because if you happen to be rear-ended, your car wouldn't shoot forwards and hit the bloke in front. But they tell me that I should stop with my feet on the pedals. What do you say about this?
Wow.
Well, you don't realize the reason that this became popular in England was that being a society, I'm sure as America is, of predominantly right-handed people, you would get an opportunity to use your left hand in pulling up the handbrake and exercise your left arm, which otherwise would
no, but
you shift with your left.
On the contrary, exactly.
Well, you do shift, right? But that doesn't require much. You're pulling that handbrake up, I guess, is, you know, it's pretty serious exercise.
So this is an aerobic reason that Inspector Lavender?
I think so. I think so. And I can see his reasoning, too.
You can.
About being rear-ended. Sure. In fact, it's a little-known fact that when you're making a turn, if you're on a two-lane road, i.e. one lane going your way, one lane coming the other way, and you're going to make a left-hand turn, that is, cutting across traffic, most people don't know enough not to turn the wheels in advance of making the turn. In other words, they'll sit there and begin to crank the wheel over to the left in anticipation of making the turn. So if somebody comes up and pops you from behind, he nudges you into the oncoming traffic.
Ooh.
When you wouldn't want to be in the oncoming traffic.
Exactly.
And you will be struck. However, if you use Inspector
Lavender
Wisteria's method here, then in fact you can prevent that. And just keeping your foot lightly on the brake pedal is not enough. But having the handbrake set is actually pretty safe,
I think. A little much, isn't it? I mean,
it's a pain in the butt, but if you have nothing else to do.
Come on, Sarah. I mean, it's a little bit of overkill, you should pardon the expression. I mean, the guy is being obsessive, compulsive.
So,
it comes to a stop.
Does it mean I have to break my old habits?
Well, I mean, the way I solve the problem is when I come to a stop, I shut the engine off.
Actually, he doesn't even have to go that far.
I don't have to
when
shut
he comes to a stop,
off.
It stalls. And he has to restart it.
Yeah. No, I mean, Inspector Lavender, in the pure technical sense, is correct. And this is the only reason for it, the idea of being rear-ended, and then you won't get thrown hundreds of feet. But I think it's a bit too much.
How many years, Sarah, if you would reveal, have you been doing this?
Oh, throughout my entire driving career.
Would you say that's...
About 309 years.
So you'd say a few decades.
Quite a while, anyway.
Quite a few. I would say you probably will never be able to break this habit. This is like having a dog that does his numbers on the carpet. Forget it. You're done for.
Well, on the other hand, you're not doing any damage to anything. I mean, if you wanted to do this, this is fine. You're not wearing anything out. Everything will last as long as it would have lasted otherwise. And once in a while, you might have to replace a brake cable. But if it makes you feel better, if you live in fear that you will be rear-ended, then I guess that's the thing to do.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Well, thanks.
And, I have a small business here in Albany, Oregon.
I knew she was going to try to sell us something.
And I sell T-shirts, and I'm sure that next week I'm going to be inundated with people coming in asking me to print I Heard Albany, Oregon on cartons.
Ah, you know what you need? You need the slogan on your T-shirt, I Break for Nothing. See you, Sarah.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
I break for no apparent reason.
No apparent. Well, another hour of your precious life has been squandered listening to Car
and
Talk.
Precious it is in my case.
Our producer is Doug Lavoisier, Sakdugas Berman. Our associate producer and dean of the College of Auto Musicology is Ken Babyface Rogers.
We need some more
names
for him.
Anywhere near enough middle names.
No, we're gonna work. What I thought. We got to work on that.
We'll be working on that. In the green room next
Rollerblades, Rogers is good.
Our engineer and assistant producer is Jennifer Jiffy Loeb, who has lost a few middle names. We'll have to make sure. We'll have to rectify that. Our technical advisor is John Bugsy Sebastian Sweet Cheeks, Mr. Hype, Free Lunch Lawler.
Who is now 40 years and 7 weeks old.
Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research. Our automotive medical researcher is Dr. Denton Fenden. Our secretary of pain relief is Les Aspirin. Our staff psychologist is Les Moody. Our director of assertiveness training is Lois Steen.
Lois Steen. I like that.
Our staff geneticist is Dr. Gene Poole. Our director of long-range strategic planning is Kay Sarah, who's married to Frank Sarah and now goes by her married name, Kay Sarah.
Sarah.
Our transportation coordinator is Rick Shaw. The manager of the Tappet Brothers Capital Depreciation Fund is Less Is More. And the chairman of our math department is Horatio Algebra. Mr. Gigi does our hair. And of course, last and least, our chief legal counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howell is you, Louis Dewey, known to the other bums in Harvard Square as the guy who works for Flick and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. Huey Louis Dewey.
We have to find a job for Sylvia Poggioli.
You like
what a name. You have to shake your head when you say her name. You can't say Pajoli. Well, notice that. Stop! Stop! What a name.
Anyway, we're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like me.
Bye-bye. Car Talk is a production of Dewey Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Daniel Shore shakes his head in disbelief every time he hears us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.